Deuteronomy chapter 29, we read at verse 29. The secret things belong unto the Lord our God, but those things which are revealed belong unto us and to our children forever, that we may do all the words of this law. The secret things belong unto the Lord our God. It is an undoubted truth that the more we learn, the more we realize we still have to learn. One could multiply examples, but let's just take three at comparative random. It's possible, for example, to have little or no knowledge of the stars and their constellations beyond, say, recognizing perhaps the North Star or the Big Dipper. That's perhaps just about all I can manage to recognize. If you look up at the night sky, I can recognize these two. That's about it. I wish I had more knowledge. I wish I could recognize all the different planets and constellations. But let's just say, for example, that you had some expert astronomer who can effectively map out the skies and recognize all the different constellations and planets and where everything was and what the orbit was of this one and how it would move across the sky over the course of the months. He himself would be deeply conscious of just how much as yet he didn't know about the universe. He would be frustrated by how far his telescope couldn't reach and all that he yet had to know, and yet he knows far more than a great many people. And the more we learn, the more we realize how little we do know. Similarly, one may look out at the sea and be perfectly content to take, say, a short trip on a pleasure craft or take the ferry over to the mainland or whatever, and yet if one were to become more involved and more knowledgeable and interested in the sea and learn about the different tides and swells and eddies and currents and the reading of the weather and the winds and the unique characteristics of some patches or stretches of water and the dangers of others. The more you learn about the different waters and different seasons, the more you realize how much there is still to learn, how much more you need to know and there is to know. And the more expert you become, the more you realize how little you know. Ignorance, in a sense, may be bliss, but the more you know, the more you realize how little you know. One may walk upon the land or dig in it and grow things. You might have a wee vegetable garden or whatever, and yet still be blissfully ignorant of the kind of rock underneath your soil or the type of soil that you're digging in, which dictates why some things will grow well and other crops or plants will fail in a particular location, a particular kind of soil. The less you know in some ways, the more content you are with what you think you know, but the more you know, the more you realize how little you know. The land, the sea, the night sky. I haven't even begun to talk about animals or bird life or the different species of plants and trees, much less have I touched on the miraculous complexity of the human body, for example. And yet all these things, whilst they may be mysteries to most of us, they are not secret. Thousands of years of recorded observation and experiment and documenting of what has been learned has meant that individual men and women, through a lifetime of study and immersion in their chosen subject, may indeed become experts in any or all of these fields in the sense that they know more than most of their fellow mortals. But such experts would be the first to acknowledge how much more there is still yet to be discovered. Such is knowledge. Whatever the Lord enables us to discover, he himself already knew from way back in the beginning and had ordered and arranged all these things to be as we eventually discover them to be. And yet, you know, you still get the vanity and stupidity of some that say, oh, we've discovered all this, we're making such huge strides, and we've learned this and we've learned that. God already knew it from the beginning, and time and again, the more man discovers, the more he says, oh yeah, it actually says something like that in the Bible ages ago, thousands of years ago. Oh, never twigged on that. God is way ahead of us. He already ordered everything in the way that we eventually discover it to be. Those things which are revealed belong to us and to our children forever. But these things are simply observable and obtainable facts about the world and the universe. They were not a secret. They were never a secret. It was just that we'd not discovered them yet. But some things the Lord does keep secret. The secret things belong unto the Lord our God. Men may dissect and analyze the workings and anatomy of the human body, and may even seek to study the workings of the human mind, but man cannot plumb the deep well that is, for example, the human heart, or properly understand the nature and complexity of a human soul. Ecclesiastes 11 at verse 5 says, "As thou knowest not what is the way of the spirit, nor how the bones do grow in the womb of her that is with child, even so thou knowest not the works of God who maketh all." Now, a medical scientist might be saying, "Oh, but we do know how the bones grow in the womb. Cells divide and keep multiplying, and so they grow." Well, we might say, "Okay, well, that's fine. That's me, a statement of fact, but tell me, what is it that causes some cells to produce bones and others to produce muscle and others to produce blood and others to produce the heart and still others to cause it to begin to be? Oh, well, they're all doing different functions." Yes, but they all begin from the same cell that starts subdividing and multiplying. What makes them go off in different directions? More to the point, my learned friend, if you were to again quiz the medical scientist, why? Why does it happen this way? Why do the cells react this way from the moment of conception? Why does this one unique seed, for example, of a human father break through and unite with this one seed of the human mother? Why this and not one of the other millions of possibilities? How is a soul brought into being? Where is the soul before that conception occurs? Did it exist somewhere else? Probably not. But if it never existed, it must surely have existed at the very least in the heart of the Father. Ephesians chapter 1 tells us, verses 4 and 5, it says, "According as he hath chosen us in him before the foundation of the world, that we should be holy and without blame before him in love, having predestinated us unto the adoption of children by Jesus Christ to himself, according to the good pleasure of his will." Now that means if the Lord has predestined and already chosen those who are his, he must have known them in a sense. Their very existence, their soul must have existed and had an identity in the heart of the Father somehow, some way before ever they came into being. Such things are more than a mystery. They are a secret. For the secrets of God's eternal decree are known only to him. And there is much else besides which is kept secret from us. I might say, well, why is my life the way that it is? Why did it take that particular turn recently, or this year, or last year, whatever, or perhaps many years ago, a twist or turn in the road that changed your life, perhaps, irrevocably, and brought you by this path unto this hour? Why did things happen that way all those years ago? Why are some born into privilege and plenty and others born into poverty and persecution? Why are some people healthy and able-bodied and others struggle their whole life with handicap, illness, or disability? Why didn't I get that job that I really wanted? Why did my son or daughter's marriage fail? Why did my loved one have to die? Where are they now? What really happens to people after they die? Why doesn't God speak to us nowadays like he did in olden times to Moses and to others? The secret things belong unto the Lord our God. But those things which are revealed belong unto us and to our children forever, that we may do all the words of this law. Some things we are not given to know. But God does not leave us helpless and alone. He doesn't tell us everything that are his secrets, but he gives us what we do need. He does not leave us helpless and alone. He says to his disciples, I will not leave you comfortless. I will come to you. John 14, verse 18. And before he is taken up into heaven, he says to them in Matthew 28, verse 20, lo, I am with you always, even unto the end of the world. Now, clearly, he was no longer to be with them bodily and physically in the flesh. His resurrection body ascended into heaven, and they saw it happen. But by his Spirit, the Holy Spirit, the Spirit of Christ, he continued not only to be with them, but to equip them and give them the power, the strength, the ability they would need to follow out the life and the witness he intended for them. As long as they are seeking to live out his great commission, to live for him, to follow his path, his teachings, his word, his plans for them, they would have everything they needed. He would supply their every need. He would answer their every prayer if they were asking in his name, trying to do his will. That's what he says to them in John 14, verse 13. Whatsoever ye shall ask in my name, that will I do, that the Father may be glorified in the Son. If ye shall ask anything in my name, I will do it. If ye love me, keep my commandments, and I will pray the Father, and he shall give you another comforter, that he may abide with you forever, even the Spirit of truth, whom the world cannot receive, because it seeth him not, neither knoweth him. But ye know him, for he dwelleth with you and shall be in you. I will not leave you comfortless. I will come to you. So it was for them, and I can tell you without fear of contradiction, so it will be for us. If it is in his name we are asking. I think, yeah, but hang on, wait a minute there. That sounds like an awful lot of conditions there to me. You know, it's got to be in his will, his life, his path, his teachings, you know, his commandments. What about me? You know, what my life, my needs, my problems, my wishes, my desires? Isn't he going to help me with those if I ask him? They'd say, well, do you ask in faith? Do you ask believing that he's actually willing to help? Well, yes, of course I ask in faith. Do you really believe in him when you ask? Believe in him as the Messiah, the Son of the living God, your God and King? Or is it just that you believe that he exists? You believe that he's real? You see, that doesn't make you any different, in a sense. No offense to anyone, that doesn't make us any different from the devil. When we're told in James chapter 2, you know, verse 19, thou believest there is one God, thou doest well. The devils also believe and tremble. The devil has no problem believing that much about the Lord. James tells us that. But do you ask because you believe in who he is? His Godhead, his sonship, his claims in your life, your time, your possessions, your loves, your relationships, your money, your ambitions? Do you believe in his love for you? Do you believe in its intensity, its devoted faithfulness, its costliness, the price that he has put upon the love and redemption of a sinner such as you? Because there is no higher price that has ever been paid in heaven or on earth than that which Christ has paid for the redemption of sinners. Nobody had more riches to expend. This is the price that God pays. And it is the highest price God has ever paid for anything or anyone in all the world. And it took the resources of God himself to be able to pay it. How ridiculous when we think, oh, yeah, I can get myself there. I can do this wee bit of good. I can help people. I can write a wee check for charity. That's me pretty good. I'm nearly there. That's nothing like the price that it needs. The costliness, the price of redemption. Do we grasp this? Do you believe in his love for you and the price of that love? Do you return that love? Do you love the Lord Jesus Christ? Because, friend, that is the one thing that the devil cannot do. I venture to say the devil knows his Bible better than any of us. He knows plenty of knowledge. He is a pure spirit, so he's stronger than us. He's more powerful than us. He's not afraid of us. He knows more about God than we do. He doesn't need simply to believe. He knows plenty about God. But the one thing he cannot do is he cannot love. He will not ever love the Lord. You love him? You love him for what he has done for you, for how he has loved you, how he has gone to the cross that sinners like us might be saved. The devil knows all about God, but he does not, cannot, will not ever love him. See, it's not just enough, oh yeah, I believe he exists, I believe in him. Are you able to return his love? Are you able to love him to do that one thing the devil cannot do? You love him enough to put his life ahead of your own, his will ahead of your will, his desires and plans for you before your own self-absorbed desires. Then, yes, ask. Ask in his name and he will fulfill his plans in you. That you will live for him in all that you seek to do. That those desires, needs, plans, ambitions, paralyzing fears of the future will all come under his will, under his command, his protection. And ask for what it is you desire, you want, you need in those terms, in that light, with those priorities. Because I tell you now, when his will, his commands, his law, his gospel, his life becomes the power of your life, your business, your ambitions, your hope, your heartbeat, then you know that at last you have begun to live. That this is to live, to have the Lord living inside you, living in your heart. This is what it is to be fulfilled, to be alive, to be a light, to be redeemed. That the old life, the cause of so many tears and heartbreaks and problems, is over, is dead. For ye are dead and your life is hid with Christ in God, as Colossians tells us. It is not that God did not bother to answer your old self-absorbed, earthbound prayings before, but it is rather that his desire and will is to give you so much more and so much better than you knew even to ask. John 16, verse 24, we read, "Hitherto have ye asked nothing in my name. Ask and ye shall receive, that your joy may be full." Supposing a father has a wee boy, and a wee boy sees in a toy shop one of these brilliant wee pedal cars, or one with a tiny wee motor that he can drive around down the driveway and over the garden. He thinks, "That's what I want, that's what I want, Dad." He says, "No, I'm not going to get you that." And what the wee boy doesn't know is that when he reaches 18 or 21, the father's already got the umpteen best sports car in the garage, a real live Porsche for him to drive when he's grown up, but he's not going to buy him the wee toy. And the wee boy thinks, "Oh, he doesn't love me, he doesn't care." And the father actually has something so much better for him, but he's going to have to wait. He's going to have to wait, he's going to have to grow up a wee bit, he's going to have to learn how to drive it, he's going to have to take some responsibility, but it's there for him. Now, I know that's just a sort of silly worldly example, but what we ask for so often in our self-absorbed worldly prayers, it's like toys compared to the grown-up lasting reality that the Lord has in store for those that love him. We are dead to the old self. Your life is hid with Christ in God. He desires to give you so much better. "Hitherto have ye asked nothing in my name. Ask and ye shall receive, that your joy may be full." The secret things belong unto the Lord our God, but those things which are revealed belong unto us. Not everything is revealed to us just now. And not knowing is not easy. Let's make no bones about it. Not knowing is not easy. Many years ago, a man of God wrote the following words, which I've often found comfort when someone would go like this. "When the way seems dark before me, give me grace to walk trustingly. When much is obscure to me, let me be all the more faithful to the little that I can clearly see. When the distant scene is clouded, let me rejoice that at least the next step is plain. when what thou art is most hidden from my eyes, let me still hold fast to what thou dost command. When insight falters, let obedience stand firm. What I lack in faith, let me repay in love. And if still I cannot find thee, O God, then let me search my heart and know whether it is not rather I who am blind, rather than thou who art obscure, and I who am fleeing from thee, rather than thou from me. The secret things belong unto the Lord our God, but those things which are revealed belong unto us and to our children forever, that we may do all the words of this law. Some things, yes, the Lord intends to keep secret from us, but he does not hide himself from us. He came among us in the flesh. He revealed God to human eyes. He that hath seen me hath seen the Father. And how sayest thou then, show us the Father? Believest thou not that I am the Father, and the Father in me? As he says to them in John 14. Well, do you? Ah, yes, but they saw him in the flesh. It was easier for them. I haven't seen him in the flesh. No, but aside from the promise of his Spirit, you have his letters, his law, his gospel teachings and commandments. They didn't have all these things written down in front of them. They didn't have access to all these things. You know all about him, or as much about him as you are willing and prepared to actually read and discover. You know, it's there to be written, to be read. You know, many years ago I was at a prayer breakfast, and I have to confess one of the reasons I was at it is because they intimated in advance that we're going to give away copies of the new NIV study Bible. I'm not a huge fan of the NIV, but a free Bible was a free Bible, so I went along to it, and sure enough, had my breakfast, took part in prayers, got my Bible at the end of it, and one of the things the guy doing the talk said was that they hoped that we wouldn't just use the study Bible as a study, but there was a preface at the beginning. He says, we hope you will read the preface at the beginning because that's why we wrote it. And there was a wee sort of chuckle went round the hall, and I thought, you know, that sounds mind-numbingly stupid and obvious, but I never actually thought of that. You know, we hope you'll read it because that's why we wrote it. They wrote it in order for it to be read. And if that's true of a preface to a comparatively modern translation of our Bible, how much more is it actually true for the inspired Word of God itself? God has written it so that it will be read. As John says, you know, at the end of his account of the Gospel, these are written that you might believe that Jesus is the Son of God. Those things that are revealed belong to us and to our children forever. There's nothing written, but it was meant to be read. And the Lord has caused all this to be written because it is meant to be read, meant to be learned and digested, because he has given it to us as our possession. Those things which are revealed belong to us and to our children forever, that we may do all the words of this law. Thus we learn his nature, his holiness, his power, his patience, his love for sinners. Thus we know him by his infallible truth. And the more we know him, the better we are enabled to love him, to live for him, whom to know is life eternal. This is not a secret. This is one of those things which are revealed, which belong to us and to our children forever, that we may do all the words of this law, all the words and deeds of this gospel. This is not a secret. This is something to share. This is something to tell. This is good news.